Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports, taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team, assemble!
Andrew Mason, who will join us coming up here in about 15 minutes, writes about his Thursday night overreaction to last night's game. Should the Broncos have pursued a Von Miller reunion? So, First of all, remember the trade brought them back draft capital that while it wasn't used in the Russell Wilson deal, it certainly gave you more freedom to go out and give up what you gave up in the Russell Wilson deal. So there's that part of it. And then, you know, secondly, the idea was, well, at least you could have approached him and brought him back in free agency. So any part of that, especially the free agent part, especially when Vaughn was saying that, hey, I'd be open to coming back, is not the trade, but the free agency, is that one that maybe George Payton should regret?
6 years, up to $120 million, over $50 million guaranteed for a 33-year-old defensive end, outside linebacker. If you do that, can you get Russell Wilson? Can you sign Russell Wilson this new deal? Can you pay both? The revisionist history behind that, I just look at a James Merrillat tweet, right? Would you rather have Nick Benito and Luke Wadenberg or Von Miller? I think you know the... Wait a minute, hold on.
James Merrillat, right after the Von Miller trade, I saw the tweet, right. Said,
yeah,
great move by George Payton getting that kind of capital for Von.
Right.
Oh, my God, James, come on, man.
Right, right.
Come on, Jerry
right.
Little.
So, yeah, right, exactly. So I'm like, would you rather pay Von Miller $120 or Russell Wilson $160? Like, come on, dude. Like, you knew you needed a quarterback. You moved on from a guy because he wasn't as productive. You know, all that stuff. Like, yeah, I don't. The revisionist history aspect of that, I'm not down with that.
All I know is that when they traded Von Miller, I don't recall. Do you? We were here. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't recall a public revolt to the idea of trading Von Miller at the time. I don't remember Bronco fans marching down on UC Health Training Center with pitchforks and lens.
No, they didn't have any pitchforks or lens. They were okay with it. And like I said, I'm okay with it too, because I don't think if Vaughn's here, I don't think you're getting the same production out of Vaughn that you got toward the end of last season, their playoff run in Los Angeles, and what you got last night from Vaughn in Buffalo.
Will Peterson, Scrappy Will, writing that Pete Carroll had a weak response on how Seattle fans should receive Russell Wilson on Monday night. He was asked about booing Russell Wilson, and how about this answer? Quote, you're either competing or you're not. I'm leaving it up to the 12s. Mm-hmm. Seattle fans nicknamed themselves the 12th man. It's game time and we're going for it. So however they take it, I'll follow their lead on that. I mean, I'm not going to be involved with that kind of opportunity to react, so I don't have to make that decision. I'm going to see what happens, but I'll leave it up to the 12s. I think they'll know exactly what to do. Code word for boo his ass.
Right.
Go ahead. You have my permission. Boy, petty. Petty, petty, petty. Petty Pete.
Petty Pete.
By the way, let me ask you this. The 12s, did they nickname themselves?
Oh, something like
you
that.
Know my, Yeah, you know my rules about nicknames, right?
I don't know. Probably at some point, Jim Zorn or Steve Largent or Chad Brown came out and said, wow, these fans, they're awesome. Yeah. They're like a 12th man out there.
Yeah, or the Dan Dornick, maybe he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, you don't remember Dan Dornick, do you? Washington State's Dan Dornick?
Yeah.
Dr. Dan Dornick,
not
fullback?
Not familiar, no.
Weird.
Why couldn't Pete Carroll do that? What is it with these guys? Whether it's Pete Carroll talking about Russell Wilson, Bill Belichick talking about Tom Brady. Why can't you just come out and say nice things? Is it ego? Are you afraid that somehow you're making your team look weak, or you're providing some sort of distraction if you come out and say something nice? Why can't you just be nice?
I apparently it's just not part of their general makeup. I truly don't understand it. No, man, Russell Wilson, like, he means the world to this city. What we accomplished together here, what a great ride it was. Wish him nothing but the best, and we should celebrate Russell. Like,
how hard is that?
Don't you? Isn't that what you would think you would do? Like, Pete's 70 whatever years old, right? I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to? I don't know.
I mean, unless
it seems natural to me.
Unless. Do you give him credit because you're trying to win a football game and you're trying to find whatever competitive advantage you can, and you think that if 65,000 Seattle fans are booing Russell Wilson, that maybe that does give you a better chance of winning the game? And then once the game is over and you've won the game, then you come out and say all those nice things?
Yeah, I'm sure that that's the way Pete Carroll thinks. I just feel like deep down inside, you know, you can tell me all you want to tell me about how running the ball and playing great defense and how we're going to, you know, manage our quarterback, and that's going to be our recipe for a successful season. And deep down inside, like, comments like that tell me you don't truly believe that.
The other thing is,
I believe you can win like that.
The other thing is, Mark, I do not think we're going to see a video tribute. And that'll sadden me. You know how I feel about video tributes.
You don't think they're going to give Russ a video tribute?
I'm starting to think that they are all in. They've pushed all the eggs into the middle of the table with the idea that they've created this narrative. They're trying to put it out there that, you know, we had to move on from Russ. We did the right thing in moving on from Russ. We didn't overspend for Russ. We made a good trade for Russ, and there'll be life after Russ. And I think that they are going to play that all the way through Monday night. And they'll wait for the day when he retires, and they'll have a day for him and retire his number. Let bygones be bygones. But I think that they're all about the competitive fervor for Monday night. And I don't think they're going to. Put it this way. Do you remember the Avalanche talking about Semyon Varlamov this way before Varley came back?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Hey, let me ask you.
He got the video tribute.
If they're really going to be that petty, they ought to do a video tribute, and it should be Russ doing nothing but taking sacks and throwing picks. How good would that be?
That'd be next level.
Hey, if we're going for petty, let's just go for petty, right?
You
right.
Can't do it. Your heart later, that.
Yeah, yeah. Let that hate out. If you're gonna do it, Let's just go all the way in.
John Davis writes at DenverFan.com with a message: no matter what happens in Week One, don't overreact in Broncos country, John. You're from here. You're not somebody that just got to town and just moved here from Texas or something, or California. Yeah. What do you mean? Don't overreact. You honestly think that if the Broncos lose Monday night, that on Tuesday, when we do our Bronco reaction Tuesday, you think the overwhelming consensus is, hey, no big deal. It's just 1 of 17.
Right.
Really?
Oh, no.
Yeah, overreacting.
You understand where you're at, right?
overreacting is what we do.
Yes.
Right? That's what we do. Yeah, that's all you can do. Like, if we don't win this game, man, it is, speaking of Chicken Little Marilad, the sky will be falling, and we will be talking what would have been if we just kept Drew Lock and continue to develop him.
Now, maybe by next Friday, cooler heads will have prevailed. But on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Absolute panic. Absolute panic. Absolute panic.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a great story, as written by Will Peterson at DenverFan.com. Aaron Gordon surprised Nikola Jokic at the Euro basketball tournament in Prague. Went all the way over there and surprised Jokic. And boy, you could see the reaction that Jokic had. The dude was genuinely touched. That's cool stuff. I mean, that's next level respect, friendship. Speaks to kind of the culture within the Nuggets, does it not?
Yeah. It really does. And I think that's how you build, like, championship type organizations. Like, when you have that kind of, like, that kind of culture, that kind of care, it means something to you. You show that. That's really cool, man. That's awesome.
And when you think about last year and all the what could have beens and Jamal Murray being hurt, Michael Porter Jr. being hurt, if there was a silver lining to all of it, is during the playoffs, Aaron Gordon had to take on an expanded role. And
right.
By the end of the playoffs, he seemed to be pretty comfortable in doing that. So as you incorporate MPJ and Jamal Murray back, and now you can add an Aaron Gordon who maybe feels a little bit more comfortable in his skin as a Nugget.
Right.
That's all good stuff.
It's really good stuff. And you're right. He did take on, like, he did play well. And it was to watch him kind of morph into a different player, if you will. Like that, to be comfortable taking over that role, playing defense and being more aggressive and getting to the foul line and doing the things he did throughout the playoffs. That does give you hope that even if MPJ, which I don't expect him to be, I have very low expectations for his return, much higher for Murray's return. But to have three dudes that feel like they're dudes, right? That to me, I look at and go, man, that's a really good position to be in.
By the way, you haven't seen the videos of Michael Porter Jr. working out this summer, shooting threes, just raining down threes.
Like, that was never my concern.
Michael Jr. Porter.
Yeah. Yeah, raining down threes. Now, show me can we show some videos of Michael Porter Jr. playing defense?
Or going hard to the basket?
Right.
Or being 7 feet tall almost and, you know.
Actually being 6'11".
And going to the free throw line?
Right.
Can't do it.
I'd like to see video of him playing 6'11 as opposed to 6'1". Yeah. That's what I'd like to see, but, well, you know.
Michael Malone right now is listening going, yep. What he just said. I'd like to see that too. That is what is going on at DenverFan.com.
He's the shortest 6'11 player in the history of basketball.
You're right. He is.
I say it about receivers. Hey, one thing I'll tell you about Emmanuel Sanders, and, you know, whether he's a Ring of Famer or not, and what, like, the conversations we had, Emmanuel Sanders at whatever he was, 5'10 and 175, 180 pounds, that dude played 6'3, 220. That's how he played the game. I respect that about him. Like, I see so many receivers that are players you look at and you go, dude, if that dude just played to his body type, that he'd be unblockable or he'd be uncoverable or whatever. And there's so many guys you see that you know, are 6'3", 230, and they play, you know, 5'9", 160. And you're like, what? Like, why? Like I said, he's the shortest 6'11 guy in the history of the NBA.
That is what's happening at DenverFan.com, where, of course, great material always being added throughout the course of the day, and it is absolutely free. So check it out, DenverFan.com. On this Is It Just Me Friday, we'll have Andrew Mason join us in just a second. Quick one, is it just me or Bronco fans are so fatalistic and will absolutely overreact and think that everyone needs to be fired or traded? To the idea that don't overreact to a loss. I think at some point you have to move on past the idea that, hey, it's only the first game. And it's one of 17. And absolutely, there's still a lot to play for. We hear that all the time in baseball. Hey, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And don't freak out about these games that you're losing in May or June. It's such a long season. Well, yeah, until you get to the end of the season and you find yourself missing out on the playoffs by a game or two, well, then all of a sudden, yeah, those games did matter, you know? And so I think when you look at what this Broncos season is all about and you understand that they were actually given a gift with the schedule for a team with a new coach, new coaching staff, new quarterback, trying to get everybody on the same page, they were gifted a very favorable schedule that they must take advantage of. And so to just say, if you lose this game, it's no big deal. Honestly, I think you're guilty of not looking at the bigger picture. Let's bring in Andrew Mason, our senior Bronco writer at DenverFan.com, joining us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. What say you to that, Mace?
I say the Broncos should thank their lucky stars that the first three games are what they are, as opposed to being the last three games. Because if you took the first three and the last three and transposed them, then you'd be opening with the Rams, the Chiefs, the Chargers. And what would we be saying and expecting from these games? I think there'd probably be a lot more nervousness in Broncos country. They've been given a chance to ramp up at the start of the year, and I would say if they're not at least 2-1, they're in trouble. But they should be at least two and one with these three games that they have to start off.
Yeah, how concerned are you though, just about the environment, going on the road in Seattle, the crowd noise, the, you know, 12th man, and then you couple that with the fact that the Rams, who didn't practice anybody in the preseason, show up on a Thursday night opener and absolutely look like garbage. Like, how much, and I know it's, there's not a transient, you know, like that doesn't transition over to us, right? But it does feel like all that talk we've had, you're on high alert right now. That's what it feels like.
It feels that way, but I would say this, and I actually wrote about, I did a piece on DenverFan.com on Thursday night overreactions, and one of them, and the second overreaction I wrote about was exactly kind of what you're talking about. And I would look at last night's game, though, and say, at times, Buffalo looked like a team that hadn't played starting in the preseason either, even though they quite famously did play a lot of their starters. In fact, I mean, Buffalo was making a lot of mistakes, especially early on. It took them a while to get going. I mean, they played their starters for much of the preseason. So I get the way that everyone's going to feel about this, but I think what's going to happen is we're going to probably over attribute what happens in week one to whether you played your starters in the preseason or not. I mean, this is the first time, guys, that the Rams have lost a week one game with Sean McVay. And not only did they win the previous five, although one of them in 2020 was when nobody played preseason, three of the previous five they won by 20 points or more. So I think there are probably other reasons why the Rams lost this game than just because they didn't play their starters in the preseason, which is something they've done for the entire McVay era.
Visiting with Andrew Mason, our senior Bronco writer at DenverFan.com. Mace, what did you take from everything that came out of Seattle this week, whether it was Pete Carroll's press conference yesterday or specifically that long piece at ESPN that detailed why Seattle moved on from Russ?
The piece, at least with the unnamed stuff coming from out of Seattle, is I think that's they're trying to convince their fans, and I would even say trying to convince themselves that the move they made was the right one. And I even see a little of that in what was said yesterday with Pete Carroll's press conference. I think it's kind of on a psychological level. They're trying to rationalize what they did. They're trying to make themselves believe in it. They're trying to sell something to their fans a little bit. It doesn't surprise me one bit that they're doing this. But the only way to do that is to kind of take some things that are perceived as that can be perceived as slights and shots from the Russell Wilson end of things. So that's kind of it. I mean, I remember when Peyton Manning went back to Indianapolis, and it was a year later after he'd moved on to Denver. But there was the whole thing about Jim Irsay saying that we put up Star Wars numbers, but we weren't winning titles, and that kind of blew up. This is just a different flavor of the same kind of ice cream of trying to convince yourself that you're better off without this guy who was your dominant player and the reason why you were successful for so long.
I'm 100% with you on all that stuff. When they say, though, like from your perspective and watching, and you're out there at every practice and you've watched Russell Wilson, from your perspective, when they sit there and point, and it's ridiculous to me, but they say, hey, Russell Wilson clearly is, clearly we're making this move because, he's declining and you're not going to be able to count on his legs and he's not going to be able to move around like he used to. Like, how do you look at that and what do your eyes tell you about where Russell Wilson is as far as his athletic prowess is concerned?
I mean, my eyes tell me that he's not going to be able to rely on his legs for the explosive type runs that he had when he was younger. I mean, he's probably not going to take off and pick up a quick 25 or 30 as he would do from time to time. But is he mobile? Yeah. Can he still buy time in the pocket and moving outside of the pocket with his legs? Yeah. And that's certainly there. And that I don't think is going to go away because that's based as much on feel as anything else. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was nobody's idea of a mobile quarterback, but certainly he had a great feel for the rush and could buy time with his feet even when he got to age 38, 39, 40. And I think Russell Wilson's probably going to be in much better condition as he gets to those ages than Big Ben was. So, that's what I see. I see somebody who maybe isn't going to take off and have the explosive arms. He's more likely to get to the sideline when he gets outside of the pocket and does take off and scramble. But that's effective as well. And the other thing I see from him, and I'm saying you'll have to kind of allude to it this week, as he's kind of getting adjusted to this system, I think he's learning to trust the system and trust himself in all the throws that he can make, including throws across the middle, which is, I know, obviously a big critique that exists out there of Russell Wilson. But watching him in practice, I'm seeing him work the short to intermediate middle a lot more than he used to. And I think that's something that's only going to grow over time as he gets accustomed to what Nathaniel Hackett's doing schematically. And then I think Hackett's going to adjust a little bit to Russell Wilson. I think what we're going to see, fellas, is something very similar to other great quarterbacks that got into their mid to late 30s. You think of Peyton Manning when he came here people thought, oh, maybe he's done after the neck surgeries. And he ended up having a second prime here in Denver. There was a time when people thought Drew Brees was done, and then he had a second prime toward the end of his time with the Saints. Aaron Rodgers dipped a little bit in the late 2010s, and you know, he's back-to-back MVPs. A lot of these great quarterbacks have this kind of second prime that they hit in there at some point in the mid to late 30s. And honestly, from what I see of Wilson and how he's working in this offense, I think it may not happen this year. I think he'll have a very good season, but I think while he's here in Denver in the course of this contract that he signed, we're going to see a second prime from him, another bump that keeps him among the top-level quarterbacks as he gets into his late 30s.
All right, Mace, great stuff. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, fellas. Have a great weekend.
Andrew Mason, our senior Bronco writer at DenverFan.com, joining us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Coming up next, the best of Is It Just Me Friday, and will we learn everything we need to know about the compete level in Russell Wilson on Monday night? That's next.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
It's time for Schlereth and Evans' big story of the day.
Fine, it's just that you're so big.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big mistake. Big. Huge.
No, I don't worry about all that stuff. I mean, people you know, have opinions and thoughts and ideas, and everybody has their own right to think what they want to think. You know, I know how the whole thing went and how it transpired and just the whole situation. But also at the same time, too, I know that, you know, every second of it I've enjoyed, you know, in terms of being there and just trying to give my all every day. You know, that's all I know.
Hey, there he is. High Road. Russell High Road Wilson. That's his new nickname.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everything is awesome. We've got the music.
Right.
Okay, awesome. Oh, there you go. Hold on. Play it. Play it. This is Russell Wilson. Whenever Russell Wilson speaks, this is what has to play.
Right.
Tell me that doesn't just get you going, huh? You're driving along right now. Your head's starting to bop a little bit, right? Russell High Road Wilson.
I was just thinking of what would be a good High Road song, you know?
Right.
Like just taking the high road song. So, like what would that, what would, I almost feel like it's a Steve Winwood song, you know?
So cue
back
that.
Back in
bring that
the high. Oh,
so I I'm good with it. I love Russ. I embrace the full corny. You know what I mean? I embrace it. I'm all about the corniness. I'm all about the let's ride, right? The videos. I'm no problem. Awkward the better. Okay, no problem. But this is a case where, man, I hope beneath all of that exterior beats the heart of a cold-blooded killer. And somebody who is, in a private moment, pissed off that all this stuff has come out this week, having to answer questions about how the Seahawks wanted to trade him as far back as 4 or 5 years ago, having to hear all this stuff about him being a player in decline, a player who once he loses his mobility will not be able to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't think of better bulletin board, chip on your shoulder type material than what Russell Wilson's been fed this week. And man, if he doesn't go out and just deliver a performance for the ages on Monday night, I'm going to be disappointed. Because, man, how can you be any more motivated as an athlete?
Well, I don't. Like, you can't. You know, it truly is one of the things I love about what we saw Josh Allen last night. Because Josh Allen is – that's how he's wired, like in your face, like can't wait to talk. And, you know, he's reserved in his interviews and everything else. But, man, he is one of those, like he is one of those chip on your shoulder. Like this kid, you know, went to school at Wyoming. It was the only scholarship offer he got. He was truly offended, like truly offended that the Broncos weren't interested in him. And I did that game between the Broncos and Buffalo a couple years ago. It was on a Saturday evening, and they just destroyed the Broncos. And I was like, You know, are you excited? This is like kind of for you, Wyoming, close to home, tickets. And he was like, I can't wait to shove it up there. It was like you talking about cold-blooded killer. I can't wait. I know, or at least I feel like I know, that's exactly where Russell Wilson is right now. Like, I cannot wait for this game.
I hope so. And I hope that there's part of him during the performance that does not take the high road. And let's that emotion come out. And let's it be known that, hey, these boos, they bother me. They hurt me. They right. anger me. And, you know, a stare over at Pete Carroll after maybe a 14-yard scramble and pop up and do the first down gesture and look over to the sideline. You know what? For everything that he's been fed this week and had to answer to and defend, there are times you take the high road, and then there's times where you let it be known, I think what you're doing and done is wrong, and I'm going to let you know about it.
Right.
And hopefully do it at your expense. I want to read this one on this Is It Just Me Friday. This comes in from Neil. Is it just me or so many defended Hackett's soft training camp and no preseason and pointed to the Rams? Then the Rams look like garbage, and Stink says it doesn't translate to Denver, and Mace says, well, they won their last five openers. Whatever you need to fit your narrative. I thought I had the fan on, not state-sponsored radio. If the Rams had won, y'all would be taking the biggest victory lap.
Well, the Rams have nothing to the texter. The Rams have nothing to do with how the Broncos are going to play.
It's the philosophy. It's the approach that was taken directly from McVay.
So the last 5 years with the same approach, that doesn't matter. The history of it doesn't matter. The fact that you couldn't block anybody up front because, you know, you didn't invest in that position, that doesn't matter. Like, think about the first investment that Sean McVay the first investment they made, Mike, was the investment I wanted the Broncos to make that same year. Go get Andrew Whitworth. Yeah, but he's 36 or 30, whatever it was, right? That was, I don't know. Well, yeah, he just, you know, put a Super Bowl ring on his finger, and now he's going to Amazon Prime after, you know, he was 40 years old, finishing his career.
That's true. You did call for him. I have to give credit where credit's due. You did.
That was the first. And now, like, hey, we got to protect him. That was their first move. And now what? That doesn't matter. We're smarter than that now. Like, dude, you got to have dudes that can block people. I'm sorry. You got to be able to block people. And giving up seven sacks and a bunch of pressures and a bunch of hits on your quarterback and not running it for 2 inches, you're going to be hard-pressed to win any games playing that way. Now, is that a function of we didn't practice or we didn't play our starters, or is that a function of, hey, we're just not very good? Like, up front, we're not very good. Like, do you think that 12 reps would have fixed Joe Noteboom and made him gave him the opportunity to block Von Miller? Or do you just think Joe Noteboom's not very good?
Put it this way, Stink. If Nathaniel Hackett wins on Monday and wins his next five or next four opening day games as coach of the Broncos and is 5-0 in opening games, and then ends up losing an opening game and drops to 5-1, I will not be upset. But you have to admit that so much was made of the way Nathaniel Hackett addressed the preseason, and you had so many former players on our own station who just were skeptical or flat out critical of it.
Mm-hmm.
If they lay an egg on Monday, it's just a bad look. There's no other way. It'll be hard to defend.
Yeah. Oh, listen, I get it. I mean, I totally get it. I totally understand it. And, it is what it is. I mean, you know, everybody will be jumping up and down and da da da. And, you know, and they're, the guys, if they, you know, if they don't play well, then there will be some guys that will take on our station, will take a victory lap.
But they'll have a reason to.
Yeah.
Because if Sean McVay was 5-0 and now he's 5-1. That's a record we'll all take here. If they lose on Monday, Nathaniel Hackett's 0-1 with this approach, and there'll be valid reasons.
Right.
To go after him. Time now for your injury report presented by Zoom Care. And the Broncos, not too bad. Randy Gregory, KJ Hamler, Josie Jewell, Billy Turner, all limited in practice. They were not unlimited. They were limited. See what I did there?
That we need that. I like that. That's actually, that's the way every, we should just get, take the unlimited, just take the un off of that.
Yeah.
And every time.
So every time we do the injury report? Limited.
Injury report, we got to go.
Can you
unlimited.
Do that? Can you do that? Can you do that, Fever, really quick? Can you put it? So when I say Randy Gregory at practice yesterday was
limited.
KJ Hamler.
Fever.
That is awesome. KJ That's Hamler great. At practice yesterday was
limited.
We just discovered something.
Yes.
Jonas Griffith was a full. What a comeback for Jonas Griffith, by the way. Shades of Russell Wilson coming back.
He was
much
not
earlier.
Limited.
No,
you
he
know
was.
What he was. He was unlimited.
He was unlimited. That's
unlimited.
Right.
Unlimited. Yes. Nice.
Oh man! Suddenly, I can't wait for the injury report every week.
I know. It's all of a sudden, it's become fun.
That's going to be fun every week. I can't wait. That was your injury report presented by Zoom Care. Visit zoomcare.com to learn more about their Beyond Better urgent and primary health care clinics in Denver and Boulder today. Billy Turner at practice was? He was?
Limited.
He was limited.
Yes. Okay.
So hopefully, he'll be able to play. I'm sure he will. Okay. Coming up, the best of Is It Just Me Friday next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
You know, again, some debate about, you know, just how to characterize this game on Monday. Is it a must win? Is it a game that you would classify as just being important, but not a must win? Is it not a must win at all? That it's just one of 17. I think, Mark, and I have no hesitation calling these games early in the season must wins, because I do look at the bigger picture, and I do. I'm one of those people, like a lot of people are, who has no problem when the schedule comes out putting W's and L's next to every single game, which is kind of foolish when you think about it when the schedule comes out in May. But how often do you, as a fan, do that and find that the team ends up doing pretty close to what you did back in May when the schedule came out? The record ends up being pretty close. And so I think it's fair to take a look at the bigger picture and understand that this Seattle game really is a must-win, not only from the standpoint of taking all the momentum that you have built over the last several months since the Russell Wilson trade and paying it off in game one. You don't want to have to reset everything after a downer of a loss on Monday night. And then there's just the matter of, hey, if you're smart enough and logical enough to look at the way the schedule lays out, you understand that there is a golden opportunity early on in this season and through the first eight games of this season to get off to the kind of start that will put you in place to be able to realistically think you can win 10 or 11 games and go to the playoffs. And if you do not take advantage of these first three games and the first eight games in general, you are going to put yourself in a position where it probably will be unlikely that you make it to the playoffs. So from that standpoint, I have no problem calling the Seattle win a must win, because if you don't win this game, you're going to be put in a position where you're probably going to have to win a road game somewhere else that is going to be infinitely more difficult to win than winning in Seattle.
Yeah, but here's what I always do, though. When, you know, and I always hate that. That's a win, that's a win, that's a win, that's a loss, right?
Right.
I always just, the but for me is I'm like, I just look at the schedule in general. I just look at like our team and our personnel and everything. And then I go, all right, that's a 5-win team. That's a 7-win team. That's a 10-win team. You're never 100% right on the wins and losses, but you're always really close, like which the ones they win and which ones they lose. There's always one in there that you're like, I didn't see that one coming. And there's always a win in there. You're like, I didn't see that one coming. I didn't have that one right. But you're always usually pretty close to the record. I mean, if you go back through our, you know, through the Vance Joseph and Vic Fangio, you know, the history, the last 5 years, I bet you within a game or so, you and I have completely predicted kind of what they would be.
Sure.
Right? Within a game or pretty much within a game every year. Don't you? Aren't we close to that?
And I'd say most people have been very close.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not patting ourselves on the back. I'm just saying you look at it and you're like, and I think most people right now look at the Broncos and say, that's a 10-win team or that's a 9-win team. And I think that's kind of like, will I be shocked if they win 12? Yes. Will I be shocked if they, you know, don't win 9? Or, you know, if they don't win at least 9, yeah. If they only win 8 or 7, I'll be shocked.
But in looking at this team as a 10-win team, you probably – what are you laughing at?
No, I just coughed a little.
Okay. When you look at this as a 10-win team, part of what makes you confident that they're a 10-win team is because you got them winning at Seattle. And if you don't win at Seattle, now all of a sudden that – start that you were looking at as being a favorable part of the schedule, now all of a sudden you are automatically 1 week in, you have to now look at the second half of the schedule, which is much tougher, and you now have to find a place where, okay, I had them losing this game, but now I have them winning this game.
Right.
To even it out. To still think of this as a 10-win team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather avoid all that, thank you very much.
Right.
And plus, I just want to keep the momentum going because ever since that trade went down, it's just been so many good feelings, so much sense of optimism, so much sense of a new era. And I think it would be more than just another loss if you lost on Monday night, because then you know what you have, at least for a while. Then it's like, are things really different? Is Nathaniel Hackett just like all the other first-time coaches we've watched around here the last few times with McDaniels and Vance Joseph and Vic? And, oh, boy, is there some truth to these things that are coming out of Seattle when it comes to Russell Wilson? Yeah, sure, there's plenty of time to show that those concerns are unwarranted, but you understand that if you lose on Monday, now you are starting from ground zero again. You're starting from scratch again. Rather than taking all this unbridled momentum that you've built over the last several months and just roll with it right into the season.
Yeah.
I like this texter. He goes, it's not a must-win game, but it's a you-better-win game.
Right.
I like that.
Right?
This is you. It's not a must-win, but you better win this game.
Right.
You better win this game.
It isn't. That's a great way to put it. When we've said this, you know, you and I have been looking for this for a couple of years because we've like, it's a must win. It's never a must win, but it's I know what it feels like, Mike. I know what it feels like to win the opener and the kind of momentum that rolls, you roll into the season. And I know what it's like to lose the opener and just how miserable that feels, losing the opener. And especially when you have expectations, right? We have expectations. And this is one, as tough as a place is to play, Seattle's as tough as there is, this is a you better win. You better win this game.
Well, we'll have a chance to talk about it in more detail coming up on Monday, a full weekend of college and pro football. You get to just kind of sit back and be a fan all day on Sunday. You don't have to just be laser-focused on the Broncos. Just enjoy all the NFL football on Sunday. College coming up tomorrow. You've got Detroit and Philadelphia. Who do you think wins that game? Oh, no, you probably can't say that, huh?
No, that has nothing to do. I think Philadelphia's a better football team.
Okay.
I think Philadelphia has one glaring question. Their roster is loaded. They really legitimately have one glaring question.
Jalen Hurts.
And that is, what does Jalen Hurts become?
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, have a great time with Dan Campbell. Can't wait to hear Dan Campbell's stories coming up on Monday. Have a great call, and everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Chad and Nate coming up next. Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.